committee meeting together here Wednesday, April 12th at 5:30 p.m. So we'll start with Public Works Committee. I'll accept a call to order and a roll call. Or I've called the meeting to order. Roll call. Who's here for Public Works?
Kirk.
Oh, Public Works.
Duh.
Okay, Kirk. I was thinking the other one. Okay, and myself and Sean and Brad.
Lynn is going to be absent.
Yep.
And Ted had indicated that he will try to make it to the second half of this meeting, the Public Works Committee meeting. And Mike is absent as well. Excuse the absence. He's on vacation, and he's out of the country.
Whoa. Okay.
So being we do not have a quorum, we can adjourn.
Adjourn for now.
Then Parks can pick it up.
We've got one person coming in right now. And I don't know who it is.
We have a quorum.
All right.
There you go.
Ted, oh.
Hello.
Ted was here right on time. Thanks, Ted.
As if there was any doubt.
So we do have a quorum.
Okay. So we'll return to call the meeting to order. Roll call. Kurt?
Here.
Ted?
Yo.
Sean? Myself. All right. A motion to modify or adopt the agenda as presented.
Move to adopt.
Move to adopt. Kurt?
I'll second.
Second, Ted. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, moving on to number three. Approve the minutes from the March 15th, 2023 meeting. You'll see a copy attached to this.
Cool.
Got a motion to approve?
Motion to approve?
Yeah, we're way up on the top.
Pardon?
We should be up here.
Duh.
Oh, how come I get it down?
So now the Parks Committee can call their meeting to order.
Oh, all right. Sorry about that.
Coach. So the Parks Committee can call their meeting to order.
Chris? You want to go ahead and call that?
All right. I'll call the Parks meeting to order. Accept a motion to modify or adopt their agenda.
Move to approve.
Okay. A second?
Second.
All right. All in favor? Say aye. Excellent. Discussion slash action Riverview Park Regional Stormwater Fund, DPW and Parks Department.
Pursuant to DNR administrative rules, the village owns and maintains 7 regional stormwater ponds. The ponds help the village meet DNR stormwater quality and quantity requirements. Most recently, the village has constructed the Bethel Baptist Pond. That pond was constructed in 2020. To continue our commitment to meet DNR stormwater requirements, the village has begun planning for the construction of an 8th pond. Here tonight to provide more information on the planning effort is Nick Vandahay, Vice President, Senior Water Resource Engineer of McMahon Associates.
All right. So, as Sean alluded to, we have some regulatory requirements. So where this all begins, for those that are not familiar with the village's stormwater permit, it starts at that federal level with the Clean Water Act. And the EPA basically requires each state to kind of go out and identify water bodies that are impaired by certain pollutants. So if you remember the Fox River PCB thing from two decades ago, so that was the driver was through the Clean Water Act, essentially. So in our area, we also have the sediment and phosphorus pollutants that are on this same list as what the PCB was. So photo on the left is where Fox River discharges out into the Bay of Green Bay. You kind of see that sediment plume as it enters the bay from the river. You can see the Leo Frigo Bridge in the lower right corner. And then the phosphorus pollutant generally leads to algae growth. So this photograph is taken in the summer on the Fox River, more in the Fox Valley area, but it just kind of shows that algae growth due to that phosphorus pollutant. So the Clean Water Act has these provisions in it. One of them is a total maximum daily load, where each state is required to develop a certain number of TMDLs.
So a TMDL was developed for the lower Fox River Basin, which basically goes from the outlet of Lake Winnebago up to the Bay of Green Bay. And any of the red water bodies that are shown on this map, generally the named water bodies like Ashwaubenon Creek, Dutchman Creek, East River, Fox River, Bower Creek, Bear Creek, they're all impaired by sediment phosphorus pollutants. So the TMDL was adopted or approved in, back in 2012, and then that began the triggering event for incorporating it into the village's permit. So the village has been permitted since late 2006. Most recently, the permit was renewed in 2019, and it'll be renewed probably again in 2024. Generally, these permits run on 5-year cycles, I would say. But with our permit that we have with the DNR, that's where the TMDL allocations are implemented for the phosphorus and sediment pollutants. So this is a diagram of the village, and basically shows a portion of the village that drains to the Fox River and the portion that drains to the East River. So green is towards the Fox River. Generally speaking, Webster Avenue, sort of the high point, and defines which way the village drains to which water body. So the way that the pollutants are picked up is obviously when it rains or snow melts, that water or that has a way of picking up the pollutants as it travels across the landscape. So some communities we go into out on the lakeshore area, they're concerned about, you know, the bird droppings on the roofs and things like that, bacteria, that type of thing. In our case, you know, a lot of it is associated with the street habitat. You know, your car brake pads are wearing down, you know, leaking oil, tires are wearing down, exhaust fumes. All that stuff ends up on the pavement, as well as sediment, phosphorus. So in the fall when we have a leaf on, you know, on the street, or that spring pollen, sometimes you see the street turn a little green in the spring. That's just that pollen or seed ending up on the street. So then when it rains, all that stuff is picked up, and our storm sewer systems are very efficient at carrying it to the water bodies, essentially. So with the permit requirements, there's a number of things that we have to do, but we're really here tonight focused on the last one, which tends to be the more expensive of the permit requirements, and that's to address the stormwater quality and these TMDL numeric goals that are out there for the village. So the way we meet the numeric standards and the TMDL for the sediment phosphorus reductions is we certainly do street sweeping in the village. We might have some underground catch basin sumps or other types of proprietary devices. We don't have a lot of grass ditches in the village. Most of it's curb and gutter, so we rely on the street sweeping. But we could have biofilters and certainly, as Sean mentioned, a number of regional wet detention ponds. So when we do that, as a village, as Sean mentioned, we have a number of regional facilities that have been built through the decades here. And basically all the orange areas on this map are portions of the village that discharge into an existing wet detention pond. We only have one on the Fox River side, and that's over the Heritage Hill Pond. That's the one that we actually got permission from the state to put the pond within their park property there, just on the south side of 172. But the vast majority of our ponds are located in the East River watershed, kind of along the East River Trail. So you can see on the East River side, we have pretty good coverage there, with a lot of the watershed being that orange color. The blue area is essentially the Riverview Pond watershed. And that's here what we're here talking about tonight. If it's not blue or orange on the map, like the gray areas, that would be areas where we'd be doing our street sweeping and relying on that practice to help with the sediment and phosphorus reductions. But ponds tend to perform much better at a higher level than just the street sweeping activity. So this is a watershed generally for this Riverview Pond that we've been talking about. You can kind of see 172 kind of angled on the map there. Generally speaking, the water is draining east towards the East River. East River is shown with the blue ribbon there on the drawing. But basically, that yellow area, and you can see the pipes on there in black, basically carry the water down toward the review park, essentially. And this watershed is about 150 acres. You can see it includes the ball field area to the west of East River, kind of along 172 there. So when we do detention ponds, because you guys have a number of them, you kind of know what they look like and so forth, but generally speaking, there's a deep pool of water, and that is where the sediment and the pollutants kind of settle out in the bottom of that pond. When it rains, it bounces up, and then it slowly settles back to this normal water level that's always there, essentially. And then at the perimeter of the deeper water, we have the wetland plants. And this is like a safety shelf where it's very shallow water, anywhere from 0 to 12 inches deep. And the idea there is that if kids or people are trying to get to the deeper water, you know, you're walking through muck, you know, you're sinking in the muck, you're walking through the wetland plants, things like that. So it's a safety feature before you get to the deeper water. And then above the wetlands, we tend to plant prairies, like with wildflowers and prairie grasses. That way we're not mowing all the time and you get that natural habitat. So if you've walked East River Trail, I'm sure you've seen your ponds at various stages through the year. But we try to make them be amenities for the community, particularly along the park corridor. It's nice that they serve multiple functions. So one of the options that we've been looking at for that Riverview Pond watershed is depicted here. We're calling this option one. And this option goes way, way back, probably a good 15, 20 years already. Probably more like 20 years. But basically, it's on the end of Broadview Drive, right along the East River Trail. And there's a park grass area that sits back there. And there was actually a storm sewer, 48-inch diameter one, that was put in along Broadview probably about 20 years ago in anticipation of this pond project. But then the neighborhood wasn't very excited about this pond location at that time. So it was sort of shelved, if you will. So with this pond, you know, we're estimating, you know, kind of the all-in number would be about 830,000. And with this pond, we think we can get about $150,000 from the DNR for grant funding, which would cover about 18% of the overall project cost. And then the village's cost would be about in that 680 range. With this, you can see on here that there's the existing parking lot sort of on the end of Broadview Drive for the baseball complex. And I know we're a little light on parking there, so we're trying to be mindful of the big picture needs of the park as we're going through this exercise, make sure that all the needs are being taken care of here. So we are showing on this an additional 83 parking stalls to the north of Broadview and east of East River Drive there with the white lines. You can kind of see a parking lot layout there. And that's just to get us up to about that 140 parking stalls. And that's just based on the number of teams that could be doing a tournament down here and how many cars could realistically be anticipated. So, and then we're also showing some future walkways along East River Drive and Broadview, kind of connecting the park with that area. So that's this concept. With this concept, we're not anticipating any wetland disturbance with the pond or the improvements with the parking lot. And the reason that's important is when we disturb a wetland for a stormwater pond, we're not eligible for that DNR grant money anymore, so it has a fiscal impact. Plus, we don't need to pay for mitigation bank credits for disturbing the wetland, so there's another fiscal benefit of avoiding the wetland as well. So that's just option one.
And Nick, before you go on to the next option, I think it's important that we update the committee members that way back when, before my time here, I've been with the village for 5 years. I think Brad, you had mentioned it last night. We had considered this location previously. Brad, what was the time frame?
I'm going to guesstimate it was between 2000 and 2006. somewhere in that time frame.
In that time frame, we had proposed a pond in that location, and we had even started to install the infrastructure, the storm sewer, to get the water from the intersection of Broadview and East River Drive to that location. Shortly after the project got started, the village had run into a little resistance with the adjacent neighborhood, and the project was postponed. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
The second option, with this one, we're trying not to put it near the homes. You know, it's sort of being put tucked in that corner along the river behind the larger ball fields on 172. So this option would require relocating two of the baseball fields, essentially, and the proposal is to shift them closer to East River Drive there. But when we're doing this, we are impacting wetlands, which are shown in red there. You can kind of see the red shape. And that red boundary is about an acre of wetland impact. Because really we're putting the pond where there aren't wetlands, because that's where the ball field is, so we're moving the ball fields into the wetland area, because that park area next to the homes, just to the south of the existing parking lot, isn't big enough to accommodate the ball fields, so it's just a matter of the geometry of trying to figure out where those facilities could be located. On top of that, we have like a parking lot shown there with about 144 parking stalls, similar. Again, that's just the number that I think we need. So that would still utilize some of that existing park area just southeast of that end of Broadview cul-de-sac, essentially. We did try to leave some space in there for some landscaping kind of between the property line and the parking lot. But generally speaking, this gets you that 144 parking stalls, essentially. With this option, because the pond is not in a wetland, we're still eligible for the DNR grant, even though the ball fields are resulting in wetland disturbance. And that's just a nuance of how the DNR grant funding program works. If the pond is in the wetland, we lose the grant opportunity. But if the ball field is in the wetland, then it doesn't affect that DNR grants program. So with this project, though, we have to run a lot of storm sewer because, as Sean mentioned, we had previously installed a 48-inch storm sewer in Broadview in anticipation of pond going to the south, as shown in option one. So now we would have to, those light blue lines there, we're grabbing that storm sewer and bringing it to this new pond location, kind of running it along the backside of the outfield of the ball fields, and then between the two ball fields that would be relocated as we head up to East Shore Drive. So that piping adds quite a bit of cost, if you will, as you can imagine, whereas the first option really doesn't have a lot of piping because it's all kind of there already. So we're estimating, you know, over $2 million for this one. So the village's cost would be significantly higher than this option two.
That's just for the piping? We don't have the cost of the expanded parking lot in that number?
No, all of these options, we're taking the parking lot numbers out, but okay. I did include money in there to relocate the ball fields because really they need to be relocated because the pond would be going in the location. So to be fair about it, we included the relocated ball fields, including the dugouts and, you know, the announcers area, things like that. So that's part of the reason the cost is higher. It's just associated with relocating the ball fields.
Nick, did that cost also include the cost to mitigate for the loss of wetlands?
Yes, and there was about an acre of wetland, so we always have to buy more than what we disturb. It's just like the ratio that they apply. So to buy into a mitigation bank is like probably $150,000 alone just because of the wetland disturbance, essentially. So that's included in the budget, which is just a requirement of disturbing that wetland acreage.
Fred, did you have a question?
I was going to ask the same. That's good.
And then the third option, we're leaving the ball fields alone in this scenario. We're still reconfiguring the parking lot and expanding the parking lot at the end of Broadview Court cul-de-sac. But rather than, but now we're putting the pond sort of at the intersection. So it's not behind the homes, but it's across the street from the homes. So out of all the pond up, you know, the option two is where the pond is furthest away from the residents. Options one and three, it's closest, if you will. So, but with this option, because the pond is right near that 48-inch storm sewer that's already in Broadview, our storm sewer costs go down again, right? I don't need to relocate ball fields. But now my pond is in the wetland, right? And though I'm not disturbing an acre like the previous option, I'm disturbing a, you know, 0.4, half acre, something like that. So I still have to mitigate that, but it's not going to be 150,000, it might be like 75,000. So that's included in here. But as I mentioned earlier, when we put a stormwater facility within a wetland, the DNR doesn't want to throw its money at those kind of projects because it's a little at odds with some of their mission, if you will. So for that reason, they, you know, it's not like they wouldn't say you can't build it. I mean, we still have to go through the permitting process to convince them it's the right thing to do, but we won't be able to get the grant funding part of it. So this one would end up being all village costs, essentially, and this is just a little bit over the million mark on this one. So those are the three different options, and there's many more, but these are the bigger ideas, if you will. You know, there's always refinements that can be made. This summary is just a very brief summary of the different options and some of the numbers that go with it. Generally speaking, each wet pond at the end of the day is going to be about the same size. I know these numbers show different open water sizes, but at the end of the day, it's likely going to be very similar in performance. The wetland impact, you can see option one is no impact, two is the highest, option three is sort of middle of the road. They all have about the same number of parking stalls just to meet the park's needs for the future. What the village's cost would be with each option, where we could get the grant funding, things like that. So the reason we'd like to go out and do a public informational meeting is, one, to get the feedback from the residents, because eventually we have to submit an application for permits for the state. And if one of the options is selected that involves a wetland disturbance, we have to prove to the DNR that we've done everything we can to avoid and minimize. And right now, our avoid and minimize one that the DNR would prefer is option one, because there are zero wetland disturbance, right? So that's the one they're going to prefer. So if the neighborhood is adamantly opposed to option one, then the informational meeting allows me to gather that information and then make the case to the state. They do consider public sentiment, if you will, in the permit process, but it's not the only metric that they use in the decision-making process. So that's why this process is important for us. To one, because if you do option one, it's really the one that the public has previously said they are not really excited about, right? And one of the reasons the previous village board had shelved it. So then if you stick on that path, then you're kind of back to option two or three, and then I need to make the case to the DNR why option one doesn't work, and that public input helps. Just help makes the case, but then prices go up too. So,
are you able or be able to discuss what some of that pushback was back in 2006, 2008 that stalled the project out, more specifically than just neighborhood pushback?
We could probably pull all those minutes out from that, those meetings, but I want to say for the most part it was relatively close to the homes into their backyard.
So do people not like looking at it, or is there a fear of kids falling in it, or
I don't want to speak too much out of turn, but
I mean, maybe in other experiences.
Yeah, so some things that we hear. Some people love to be next to the water. They like the habitat, the wildlife, the butterflies, the birds, all those other things. You know, you got a little buffer between them and the trail, you know, and the people, like, good neighbor. But you got to be able to get past having that open water closer to your house. So if you have little kids or something like that, some parents get very concerned about that. One thing that's a little unique here is the river's really not that far away, you know, so it's not like we don't have open water in the area, or, you know, a busy street intersection, things like that. So, but those are some of the reasons. We put many, many ponds right up against backyards of residences, and it really depends upon the people that own the houses and how they feel about it, and what their mindset is on it, or if they have young kids, you know. Some families would be like, yeah, go play by the water, right? And then others are a little more cautious, right? So,
yeah. Nick, have you seen a shift in the sentiment in 20 years since there was that?
Yep. I remember I was around for the Alloway meeting, so I do remember some of the discussions. But I do think that has happened. I remember when wet ponds first started being put in, there was the fear of the unknown, right? That's just natural, right? Anything that's new, people are a little concerned about it because they don't really know what it all means. I remember some communities, you know, saying, oh, we're going to fence every pond, right? But you fence a pond, public can't get to it, you know, it's not really an amenity anymore. And the fence, some attorneys would tell you the fence could be also a safety issue because if somebody did drown, God forbid, that emergency services can't get to them as quickly, right? The fence is there acting as an impediment. We've had problems with fences where some people start dumping things beyond the fence because they think it's just this area, you know, whether it's black grass clippings or you name it, you know, you find stuff. So we find that you build the safety features into the design, you know, as I mentioned, the wetland plants, the shallow water, that safety shelf, gentle slopes, try to make it be an amenity for the community. And these days, not too often that the neighborhood is against it, but, you know, so I just don't know these residents. Obviously, if it was 20 years ago, some of them may no longer live here. Or maybe they all still do. I have no idea. Or maybe their opinions have changed. Who knows?
At the time, there could have been a lot of unknown, like you had said. It was a new concept. Since then, we've built 7 ponds, and in almost every case, a native prairie is planted, and that adds to the aesthetics of that area. If you look at Mako, the Mako Pond, if you look at Longview, there are houses that abut that off of East River Drive. Kiwanis are good. Those are all good examples of what this is likely to look like. So it is pleasant to look at. At the time, there was a lot of unknown. We hadn't built any. I think a majority of our ponds were built in that time frame, 2006, 2007 time frame.
This Riverview pond was supposed to be built when the original 4 were built because we didn't really have any back then.
Okay.
And this was the one that fell to the wayside. Okay. And that was due to the public sentiment at the time. But the other 4 moved forward because those neighborhoods were okay with it.
So we had a handful of ponds that were constructed in 2005-ish?
Yep.
And that one didn't?
Yep, and this one is the one that didn't make it. But so we didn't really have ponds we could point to either at that point in time because we didn't really have any. Now we have a plethora of them, which maybe puts people's minds at ease a little bit more.
And in our 15-plus years of having 6-7 ponds, have there been any acute events at all that anybody can recall?
No.
Anything? Nothing.
Option one, what's there now? Do people mow that area, or is it just...
Parks. It's parkland.
And so the village mows it.
Correct.
Okay. So it's green.
So possibly really premature, and sorry if I have totally wrong information, but would the proposed new YMCA location have any impact on this, if that indeed is going forward? just to the west of this with parking lots and runoff and everything else, does that suddenly change options?
Or is that still kind of included into this?
The YMCA, the proposed YMCA location is located within the pond watershed.
Right.
The pond is the Riverview Pond will be designed to handle the stormwater runoff generated by that watershed area.
So any of the three would work potentially.
Yep.
And if when Nick was showing you that existing or that proposed watershed area, you can also see that the existing YMCA location would be located in this pond, this new pond.
And all three of the pond locations are intended to serve the same watershed, which would include the YMCA site and developed conditions.
So, would some of that cost be rolled into the development of a new YMCA site, or would be expected to contribute to some of this,
yes.
Or no?
The contribution that the YMCA would be making towards this is a payment in lieu.
Okay.
Payment in lieu of on-site stormwater best management practices to meet DNR water quality and quantity requirements.
Got it.
And just to be clear, that's not a specialty, because there are other areas within the village that have done the same thing. Instead of, because they are constraints within their site, they do a payment in lieu of. So we have done that in the past.
Factored in there. All right.
I would say that's very common for municipalities that own facilities, because most business owners or property owners, you know, they want to run their dry cleaning business. They don't want to operate the day-to-day of running a pond, right? So oftentimes these are more cost-effective when you look at the capital plus the operation and maintenance costs, you know, and we need it as a village anyway to meet our TMDL obligations. So any revenue that you bring in, you know, from site development activities is just ways to replenish, you know, the expenditures of the utility, right? And then you reinvest it in other stormwater facilities, if you will.
Then just very quickly, sorry to monopolize, going back to all these options. Basically, the residents that we're talking about down in around the 6, 7 o'clock region here, they're either going to be dealing with a parking lot, mm-hmm, or a pond.
Potentially.
It's going to be one of the two.
Can I answer a question? Yeah. I think I'm a guest, right?
No, you're part of the...
Okay. You matter, buddy.
Come on, coach.
You matter.
So is the parking lot an absolute?
So I think, from
the park standpoint, we want it, right?
Yeah, parks just did a park plan, and they identified a need for more parking lot.
So if it's an absolute, then could... Again, you're going to get opinions from people who live in the neighborhood, but as Ted said, you're either going to get a parking lot or an aesthetic, appealing-looking pond.
Yeah, and that could be true of the people that houses front Broadview, right? Mm-hmm. Because one option, there's a parking lot across the road, another one, there's a pond, right? And then the folks that live on the cul-de-sac on Riviera Rue, right? Pond or a parking lot, right? But there is an option where that's a ball field, or it just stays the way it is, right? But that's like the most costly option, right, for the village.
And there's roughly half dozen properties, I'm guessing, each?
On each location, yeah. There's probably six along Broadview Drive, that front there, and then those homes that abut the park along the cul-de-sac, right?
Is there a difference in cost to build a parking lot, you know, down south of Broadview, or up? And from 1 to 3, is the difference in the cost of building the parking lot?
I wouldn't say, you know, they're really about the same size. So I would say those little differences are probably normalized, and it's probably, I couldn't estimate it that close at this point in time. Because really, we're looking for the same parking stall quantity, if you will.
Right. Option one has a smaller new parking lot,
but
it also includes the reconstruction of the existing, so you end up with the same number of parking stalls.
Yeah, so this option, right, existing parking lot would stay, but it needs reconstruction. So if you had to pick one, this one might be the cheaper parking lot scenario because...
Nick, if you look at that other option, the one you just had up, in that case, I guess this, right there, either one, you could save money by remarking the parking lot. You wouldn't necessarily have to reconstruct it as long as the grades work for drainage purposes.
It's in pretty poor condition.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in either case, then it would need to be resurfaced, right?
Right.
It's not going to be 1.4 million.
Right.
So with option two, we assume we have to replace two ball fields. Do we know the usage on those fields? Do we use all five very often?
I did speak with the user group earlier this week about that, and they do occasionally. There are occasions that all five are used at one time. It's not all the time, but there are occasions that that does take place, yes.
Was it Notre Dame that softball, they still use one of those?
They do not. None of the high schools use that any longer. But there is a summer high school league that uses all five during the summer, like I said. And then depending on whether it's games or practices obviously, you know, more teams are out there at the same time and that. But they
are a few tournaments, too.
And tournaments.
Sorry, going back to the why with that proposed placement, that was going to occupy a lot of the soccer fields that are there. Where will we put in on relocating those fields, those soccer fields, which I think are usually more often in use than the ball fields, as I recall?
The proposal is currently looking to save two of the fields.
The soccer fields?
Yep. Okay. And then we have fields at Doty School. We have two fields there. We have a couple fields at Wheezy Park and two fields at Kiwanis Park. The president of the Alway Anchor Soccer came to the meeting last night and said as long as we have fields to use at this location, two fields, he was in support. I hope I didn't misstate how he said that. But.
No, you're correct, and he did also mention that their numbers have declined.
Yeah.
So their usage isn't like it used to be, that they don't necessarily need all five of those soccer fields.
Okay. Thanks.
So right now, like, we're not proposing any one of these. I think we're looking to go to the neighborhood to kind of feel everyone out and see what everyone's thought process is on that. And it might, again, back up here. I don't know how the process we would go through, but that would be good to get some neighborhood input on whichever one direction you're heading.
I took the opportunity last night when we had a good chunk of the residents from that neighborhood to say that we are working on this, that a neighborhood meeting will be coming up to talk about stormwater pond.
But basically, it has to be one of these options, more or less. I mean, this is not something we can skip out on or avoid, right?
It's how do we capture this area? 140 acre area, whatever it is.
Well, that's what I'm asking. I mean, if these are really our only options, then we got to make sure we're that blunt and saying it's got to be one of these.
Nick, can you correct me if I'm wrong? I was part of the original writing of the. Our stormwater plan with McMahon back in 96. Anyway, the requirements that the village needed to meet by like 2020 was 40% or
2013. The dates were 2008, you had to meet 20% to set up production. And then 2013, it was 40%. But in between, in about 2012, the state legislature kind of stepped in and said that the 40% goal was not enforceable. So it's still on the books, it's just the DNR can't enforce it. Since then, though, these TMDLs have been completed,
yeah,
which reestablished the goal, and then some, because now we're talking about both phosphorus and sediment. Before we were only talking about sediment. So,
what are we at right now?
So,
yeah. What are we at right now?
So,
you're welcome. There you go.
So, we have a listing of about the acres that drains the East River and the Fox River there. So definitely heavier on the East River. But what's required by the TMDL is a 40%, 41% phosphorus reduction. And that, so it's actually the same goal for East and Fox. And that's what the TMDL calls for phosphorus, which is TP, total phosphorus. That's what that stands for. And we're at about 33% on the East River, because that's where all our ponds are, right? And on the Fox River, we really only have Heritage Hill and street sweeping. So we're at about 25% there. These numbers, I need to update them with Bethel, so that'll push up the East River. But if you do, let me keep going. And then the two far right columns are the sediment goals. So for the East River, you need to get a 52% sediment reduction, which is higher than the original 40%. And then on the Fox River, it's a really big number. It's 72% reduction. And these reductions are based on doing nothing, right? So we're doing street sweeping and things like that, and the ponds. So right now on the East River, we're at about 48% without Riverview or Bethel. We're close to meeting the East River sediment. In fact, when we build Bethel in, and if you were to do Riverview, we're, in my mind, going to probably be meeting the East River TMDL for sediment and phosphorus. But the thing with the East River, we're kind of loading up on it, because that's where all our green space is for pond retrofits. We don't have a lot of real estate on the Fox River side to address and meet these needs. So the big number is actually the sediment goal of 72% on the Fox. So some of the other ponds we had identified was the clover leaf of 172 and Highway 57. Kind of along the river there, but you know, by the corrections facility and then Heritage Hill. There's those big grass areas within those clover leaves. We were going to propose to the state, or we had proposed to the state, that we build ponds within those areas because big green space, and then the state could use them in the future for their permit requirements. So we don't really have an agreement locked up with them, but you know, number of years ago, in concept, they sound agreeable to it. So that'll help the Fox River side. But the nice thing with the East River, because the East River discharges into the Fox River, if we over-treat in the East River, we can apply that overachievement to help us with the Fox River side, which is our challenge.
So I'd like to also mention that things that somewhat stalled out on the north and south cloverleaf ponds, because in order to utilize those ponds, you have to get the stormwater from the neighborhood to the north to those ponds. And under the reconstruction of Riverside Drive, when the state was planning to reconstruct Riverside Drive in 2015-2016, they had planned on installing storm sewer. I don't know if the village was going to participate in the upsizing of that to get the storm water to those locations, but unfortunately that project was postponed by the DOT, I think in 2017, and they had moved ahead with a more of a maintenance treatment to the highway mill and resurface, and they're proposing to do that again in 2026, hoping to get another 10 years out of that pavement life, and so that puts us at 2036, 2038, maybe in that time frame we might be reconstructing Riverside Drive, and then it would make sense maybe to build those ponds, because you have to open up the roadway to put that infrastructure in. So
yeah, we have a good strategy, a good plan. If you remember, I did have a slide, this one. that had, so the blue watersheds were the ones we were planning to construct yet. So we have the cloverleaf ponds at the 172 area. And then we also had identified a pond to work with the diocese because they have some green space out there and some future development needs that, you know, there's some synergy with that. So by doing Riverview, those cloverleaf ponds, a Catholic diocese pond, and a slight modification to Longview on the south end along the East River, you meet all your TMDL goals, essentially. So I think we have a very solid plan. As Sean said, the cloverleaf ones are probably a little shelved right now just because we're at the mercy of the DOT's reconstruction plans. And the diocese is probably more about opportunity when they're kind of ready over there.
You mentioned earlier that, you know, 15-plus years ago, we had no ponds. People weren't really even talking about ponds at all, and things have evolved. Has there been additional evolution of these ponds in other ministries, municipalities, rather, that they're doing something that we should be looking at? Some other functionality with a pond that's even more neighborhood-friendly or multi-use or something along those lines? Or has the evolution of ponds just stopped now?
When we prepared your plan or plans in other communities for that matter, we look at all the practices that are available, all the technologies, green infrastructure like porous pavement and rain barrels and rain gardens and, you know, you name it, it's evaluated. And we evaluate it on a cost per pound of reduction benefit from that practice. And ponds tend to win out just about every time. Especially if you have flood control needs, because I do a great job with flood control. It's just the economics that kind of lead you there. We do street sweeping, right? That's cost effective. Plus, we want to do it for aesthetic reasons and other reasons. But there are new technologies. The latest trend is looking at doing chemical treatment of ponds to like supercharge them, if you will. But you're going to need, I'm actually sitting on a committee down in Madison DNR developing a standard for the state, and just had a meeting yesterday on that. But that's where you're going to need a little building, and then you got pumps and chemical feed systems and all this other stuff that you're injecting in the pond when it rains, and then that will help that pond perform at a higher level than traditional ponds, but comes with a big cost and a big operational commitment, because you're basically running a mini wastewater plant, essentially. So cost-wise, I think you're on the right path, I would say, at this point. But it's always good to ask, you know, hey, is this still, you know, the right tools in the toolbox? Because there are things that change on a routine basis.
Nick, I like the plan that we have, and we're making headway. We haven't met the requirements yet, but we're on our way to meet DNR and TMDL requirements. I think the village has been fairly proactive in taking the right steps. How do we compare to other communities?
I think you guys are doing well. There's certainly communities that have met the TMDL already, but generally those are like the suburban communities where they have a lot of green space to work with, kind of on the fringe. You know, you guys have always been mostly developed already, so the challenge is always finding the space for these treatment facilities when you're already developed, right? Green Bay is always running into problems about contaminated sites, right? They're like, oh, here's a spot to put a pond, but an old landfill, or it's got contamination on it, you know. And then those costs come into play on whether it's a cost-effective pond retrofit opportunity or if you need to look elsewhere, right? So we have more of a residential, so we don't have a lot of those contamination issues going on. And you have this fantastic greenway along the East River, and that's served you really well from a stormwater standpoint. having all that green space over there. So just been trying to incorporate these into amenities, into that greenway system essentially, but not every community has your setup, you know. So yeah, I think you guys are doing well. You're on a good path. I see the day where you're going to need it, you know. Is it going to be in the next 5 years? No, but some of it, there's circumstances, and with the DOT schedule, we have a legitimate thing to say to the DNR, look, you're going to make us spend an extra $1 million to do the storm sewer in a perfectly good street, or how about we just wait?
So we've had a couple of developments put in the biofilters. What kind of percentage, because they're very small, but it does help to an extent?
They do. So biofilters, you know, if you're in clay soils, they're not so great at the phosphorus reduction. So sometimes that's the challenge. Like the phosphorus reduction, they don't even hit the TMDL goal.
Okay.
Like they come up short. Really, yeah, so each one's got its pros and cons, I'll just say that.
Nick, do you want to talk about the schedule?
Yeah. This is a schedule, assuming we pursue one of the two options where we're not disturbing wetlands, right? Because if you remember, there's one that we're not eligible to pursue the DNR grant. So the thought was that if the option is selected that we are eligible for the grant, we would apply tax day essentially of next year. That's when this grant program cycle comes up. So we'd apply in 2024 in the spring, and then probably by September, October of 24, we know if we score well enough to get the grant. Every grant we've helped you guys apply for, you've received in this program, so there's no reason in my mind we can't be successful with it. And then the DNR allows you, village might enter into an agreement with the DNR on the grant, like in December of 24. That would allow us to bid in January of 25, and then start construction in the spring of 25, with, you know, the main construction ending in the fall of 25, and that's about when the YMCA is up and running, or they might carry a little bit into 26 maybe. We just want to make sure that the pond is up and operational by the time the YMCA project is completed, right? Because otherwise they would have to build their own stormwater facility, and then that would be a lost revenue opportunity, you know, because you're going to end up probably building something anyway, most likely. So if you can get some extra revenue from it, it just makes sense. And then the prairie wetland would come a little later. That's just a process, basically. It's about the timing of it. We generally don't want to do it right away, so we have a more successful prairie by killing off weed seeds and things like that. So that's sort of the way the schedule looks at this point. Some of this could change depending on the why, I guess. But
in terms of discussion or action, will you need a motion to... So it's primarily discussion here.
No, and what I thought about tonight, and I didn't talk to Brad or Chris about this, but I think we should hold off making a recommendation tonight until after we've had the public informational meeting. At that time, after comment has been provided, Nick will summarize those comments. We'll share those with you, and then at that time, bring it back to the committee, the joint committee, and get a recommendation from you guys.
Yes, Nick alluded to it. It's so critical for us to get that public input.
Any idea when that could happen?
We had talked a little bit about a potential schedule for that. Just trying to keep up with the schedule that Nick has proposed. We're looking at sometime within the next couple months.
Yeah. Really, we would do very similar to what we just did here tonight with this public information meeting, I think. Just see how the conversation goes.
We could potentially hold the public informational meeting right before the village board meeting? Or no, I guess we wouldn't necessarily have to do that, would we?
No, I think you would hold it on a separate night.
Yeah. Because we want to bring it back to this committee.
Yep.
Okay, anything else for the Park and Rec Committee at this point?
Appreciate the time.
All right. I'll accept a motion to adjourn.
Move.
And a second.
Second.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Yeah, can we get some lucky?
Adjourned at 6:28. I'd like to call the Public Works Committee meeting. We're here Wednesday, April 12th, 6:30 p.m. at the Village Hall. Roll call, please. This is for Public Works, and the other one was for Park and Rec, so I guess we'll redo this once we have Kurt.
Here.
Ted. Myself.
Ted. Howdy.
Happy night.
Thanks.
Thanks, Sean. And we have Lynn Green is absent, as is Mike as well. Motion to adopt and or modify our agenda.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. You'll find attached the minutes from the March 15th meeting. If you had a chance to look over those, I'd accept a motion to accept or modify.
Motion to accept.
All right.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. All right. Moving on to announcements. Hearing none, we will move on to public appearances. Any public appearances via email or phone or anything? We have no one present, so we'll move on to new business. Discussion action regarding request to use ARPA funds to repair Fuel Island.
Give me a minute. Or give me a minute.
While you're pulling that up, refresh my memory. Didn't we run through this already on the Fuel Island?
We did. It's now as a potential project.
Oh, okay. So we just have some more.
No, the bids are in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Brad, I don't know that I can find the click share. Got it.
Are you able to identify the difference between why these two numbers are so far?
It was hard to determine that because Northwest Petroleum Services didn't provide a breakdown in their numbers. I want to bring up the packet real quick.
I thought we had a chart of all of them together, did we not?
Close to a year now, we discovered that the containment system below the dispensers was no longer watertight and in need of repair. Because of that, I have reached out to get quotes. I had talked to Northwest Petroleum Services and Walz Petroleum Services. I had obtained two quotes, one from each. And there was a lot of back and forth with both. Both are extremely busy. This effort started back in September, October of last year. Finally was able to get the two quotes that were similar in scope. And because Northwest Petroleum Services didn't break out their cost, I don't know why their cost was that much higher. But I am happy with the two quotes. This is somewhat out of our wheelhouse, and initially we had estimated it would cost $100,000, but I think we're getting a fair price here.
Have we used Northwest or Walz for anything else in the past? Have we ever used either one of these services for anything else in the past?
It's a good question. I'm not sure. That would be a good question for Bob and Daryl. Just with just with working with them over the last 4 to 6 months to obtain these quotes, these are reputable firms. I know that Waltz works in this area, and they also work in the Milwaukee area. Northwest Petroleum, that's out of Wausau, and they service from Wausau to Green Bay and then up to into Sturgeon Bay. So these aren't small firms. These are larger, reputable firms. The work, it is a lot of work. The scope of it involves having to remove the existing dispensers. It requires that we remove concrete so that we can get to the sumps located below. It includes a running new pipe from the tank to the south to the island. The installation of watertight seals, and then putting those dispensers back on top of the replaced sump and reconnecting all of the electrical. And then you have the restoration, the concrete pad, the island. We'll do, under a different contract, we'll restore the asphalt and topsoil behind. You are correct, here's another picture. I should also mention that the work also includes the replacement of the sump located here. They call it the transition. I believe that they call it the transition sump, along with the seals here. This is our tank. It holds both diesel and gas. There's a partition in it, and then it's piped over to the fuel island. Here's a close-up picture of the fuel island here. We had talked about this, and included in the packet are the quotes. This committee had previously discussed this when we had talked about how best to use ARPA funds, and we had identified five projects, and this was one of the five, and we're hoping to use ARPA funds to make the repair.
Are you looking for a recommendation of $53,000 and 15 cents or $58,000?
I'm asking for 58 because this isn't something that we do every day. There probably are some unknowns that we're not aware of that will likely require a change order, and I want to make sure that I have not too much to get the work done.
I'm sorry to ask, but did we look at all, while we're looking at this, the cost of actually covering this work, which then should help extend the life of this work and more comfortable for our employees as they're trying to fuel up in the rain?
Oh, you mean
snow? Yeah, an actual cover, a roof over this.
I know we hadn't considered that. Has that ever come up, Brad, mm-hmm. the need for that?
No, but I'm just thinking, like at Optimus Park, we have it over a similar structure over top of the bleachers. That was $20-some thousand.
Oh, yeah, I don't think it would be cheap, but at the same time, if it would essentially double the lifespan of it because it's getting less wear and tear from the elements because it's somewhat protected, and your staff are going to be happier because they're not getting out dealing with rain and snow and everything else.
And that's something that's possible that we could buy and build ourselves.
Okay, I was just thinking tall enough it would probably have to be incorporated into the concrete work at the island base, kind of like a fuel station. But I think there would be benefit to it beyond just aesthetics and pleasing staff. I think it could actually enhance the longevity of the pumps themselves because it helps to take some of the elements out.
I haven't heard that comment from Public Works operators. I can see, you know, there's a reason why they're covered at gas stations, right? Mm-hmm. Should mention that this work would come with a 10-year warranty.
Yeah, we briefly talked about buying fuel elsewhere.
We did.
Well, that doesn't have a whole lot of merit when we figured it all out, right? So that.
Yeah.
But at least for argument's sake, we can say, well, we looked into that, it was not cost-effective, that's why we're doing this.
There's a convenience with having it right outside your door.
I can only
not
think,
having to send somebody to go fuel a truck and create another task.
Right.
When was the stuff built? Do you know?
2005.
2005.
So it's 18 years old. Every time it rains, water leaks into those sumps and it triggers a sensor, and we have to go out and pump out those sumps to get the sensor to shut off.
When we allocated the ARPA funds, we can't pull that number up, can we? Didn't we make a recommendation to pick out certain projects?
We did.
Do you know how that all came out? Was it exact, or
I had made
nice to see
mention
that
of that to the village board, but the village board hadn't taken any action on that group. We're taking the projects one at a time.
Kind of one at a time. Those that were listed as priorities through the various committees.
Did we put 100 at that point?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the good news is we're a little more than half of that.
Well, I'll throw a motion out there that we recommend the village board utilize ARPA funds in the amount of $78,000 for the repair. For the repair of the fuel stations, with a $20,000 allotment that could go towards a cover.
Because of the way the reporting goes with ARPA, you're allocating funds for a project, and if you don't use it, I don't know how that would come back. That's something to look into in the future, but
I mean, the village board can vote how they want, but and so can we.
I think there'll be value to it. Better lighting.
And this stuff's only, what, you said 18, 19 years old?
Brad, when do we have to start these projects?
They have to be allocated by December 31st, 2024. Or,
yeah.
You need a contract in place.
A contract in place.
We have it. So you have to have the contract awarded and signed.
Correct.
And I'm sure it's going to be more than $20,000. We would have to engineer that. We'd have to hire a structural engineer to do that.
Yeah.
By the time you put in the footings, the infrastructure, it's going to be expensive. And I like the idea, but I don't know that. I think it the way that it is now. It works fine. We had never thought of that, a canopy on top of it, but I want to continue to keep this project moving. I want to make this repair. The state could show up at any time and close it down, because we're failing to meet the inspections.
Yeah. I don't want to stall it out, but I mean, it does hurt to talk to Northwest or Waltz and just
get a
it might be something that's in their wheelhouse, or at the very least they know
they
work
would know.
With people on this thing.
I'm sure they could give us a number.
Right. I mean you could push it back 1 month until we come back with that price.
Yeah. Yep. I can bring this item back with that dollar amount. I mean,
what do you guys think? Am I talking crazy or worth it
I think the recent suggestion there to table it for a month, try to get a number, see if we're at 20 or 50 or 45, that would get us in at 100, give or take.
It was estimated at 100.
Originally, yes. And now we're down to we're at 58,000. But there's a... And I have no problem doing that. We'll get that information. But there are a list of other projects that we're proposing to fund through ARPA.
That might have a little higher priority than the canopy on
right.
this one.
Yeah.
Okay. What would be the best way to proceed? Table it for a month?
We just have a motion and no second, correct?
I didn't hear a second.
I don't think we have a second.
On the tabling or the 20,000 motion?
On the 78.
Well, you can do a substitute motion to table for 1 month.
Or do you want me to withdraw?
Or you can withdraw.
Sure.
I'll withdraw my motion.
Then I'll accept a motion to table for 1 month.
Okay.
To get some price estimates and then bring it back here for a recommendation.
So moved.
Right.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Item number 7, discussion action, 2023 street reconstruction inspection and staking services.
Construction of this year's street and utility reconstruction projects will start soon. We're looking at the middle of May start date for both the O1 and O2 project. Those street projects include Roselawn Boulevard, Karen Lane, Alloway Terrace, and Jackson Street. We're in the need of hiring one full-time inspector to assist with the inspection of these projects. Those construction services include review of shop drawings, as mentioned, construction inspection to ensure work is meeting planned specs, quantity measurements and documentation, preparation of service cards. On our service cards, we document location, size, and length of laterals and as-building. Mid to late part of March, I had sent out RFPs to a handful of consultants with a due date of yesterday. Unfortunately, I did not receive any proposals. Mm. A lot of the engineering consultants are full. They're busy. I was able to get a number, a proposal for the construction staking, and I'm pleased with the number that we've gotten. Mead and Hunt had provided a number to perform the construction staking required for these projects. I had this afternoon reached out to a local consultant. I started to call consultants to find out what their availability was, because we're in the need of one full-time inspector, and I was able to find a consultant with availability. I have sent them the RFP, and they're going to get me a number hopefully by the end of the week, early next week. So I wish I had some better information. I don't, but I'm happy to know that I think we'll be able to get assistance. So.
And what's budgeted for that at this point? Or?
This would be funded by the bonding.
Okay. And,
it's included in the project.
Are you? Action here would be to table?
Well, no, I think, are you looking for an action item for the staking? Because that's going to be coming before our next meeting. They'll start wanting to get that staking done.
Yeah, we could, or now that I've updated you on this item, I will be taking, when I do have a number, I will be taking it directly to the village board for their approval. We can. I don't have the exact dollar amount from me now.
So then
it's $30,000 and some change.
So then we're probably going to have to wait.
Not much we can do anyway.
Yeah.
And that could wait till next week, the 18th? The
yes.
Board will have
yes.
It then.
Yeah. Okay. My hope would be to have all of the numbers and be in a spreadsheet and provide it to the village board for their review and approval at that time.
So this one we can table.
No action?
No action.
Just an update, I guess.
Okay. All right, moving on to item number 8, discussion regarding AL 2023-01 street and utility construction bid. Big range in those numbers.
Yeah, and this is just an update. The bid results had already been taken to the village board, and these projects have already been awarded. We're currently working to get the contract signed. In the case of the O1 or Roselawn Boulevard project, we had received 8 bids on March 28th. Dave Tenner Corp was a low bidder at a base bid amount of $1,044,767.10. We had estimated the construction cost at $1.2 million. So we did get fair pricing. Similar to 2021, we had bid an alternate for the construction of sidewalk. The purpose of that was to ensure that the project was being engineered to accommodate the sidewalk in the future, so desired by the village board, and to better understand the sidewalk cost in the future. So we have that now. And if the village board were to tell me 5 years from now to go ahead and build it, I have a plan, and I could quickly put together a bid tab and get a project for bid.
And potentially, down the road, the whole length could be addressed that way, right?
Yeah, right. It doesn't make sense now to right. accept the alternate, because we had in 2021 when we built the west bar. So, as mentioned before, the village board had awarded this project to David Tenercourt.
All right. Takes us to number 9. Which is really the same thing, street utility reconstruction bid for the other streets.
Right, the O2 project. This project includes Karen Alloway Terrace and Jackson Street. We had received 6 bids on March 30th. Peters Concrete Company was a low bidder at a bid amount of $1,691,288.91. We had estimated the construction cost of this project at 1.6, so it came in a little bit higher than what we had anticipated. This project, similar to the O1, will be funded by bond financing. This project, too, had been awarded by the village board. And weather permitting, this project could start in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
All right. Moving on. Discussion item number 10, replacement of existing garbage and recycling carts.
I just wanted to bring this to your attention. The existing carts purchased in 2004 when we made a move from manual collection to automated, that those carts are at the end of their useful life. And about 2 years ago, we had stopped making repairs when we had gotten a call from a resident. My lid fell off, or I'm missing a wheel. We'd go and make a repair. But because of the age and overall condition, we're no longer doing that, but we're asking the residents to come in and purchase a new cart. We have, in Alloway, we have 5,300 households, plus or minus. Each household has a garbage and a recycling cart, so we have, roughly speaking, 11,000 carts in our system. And as indicated before, they're starting to show their wear and tear, when one's lid comes off or a wheel comes off, we ask that they come in and purchase a new one. By village code, a resident has to come in and purchase a cart from the village. We work directly with Porter, the manufacturer of the cart, to purchase these carts. They're 96 gallons. They're hot stamped with garbage and recycling. I believe they also have Village of Alloway, and there's a number on them so we can keep track of who owns what.
And the recycling are still smaller than the trash,
unless you buy new.
Unless you buy new, then they're all the same bigger. Size.
They're all 96 gallon carts now. Yeah. The older ones are
40s or 60s.
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 Yeah.
60 gallon?
Plus or minus, yeah.
My garbage is way bigger than my recycling ones. And I have a new and an old recycling. I just bought a new one and I got the old one. So.
The new carts are 96 gallons. They do come up with a manufacturer warranty of 12 on the body, 10 on all other components. To date, we've purchased, roughly speaking, 800 carts. In the near future, we will be purchasing a truckload, just over 600, because we're earlier this year we purchased 200, and we're going through rather quickly.
And they're just going to people whose carts need to be replaced?
Yes.
It wouldn't be a village-wide, everybody's getting new carts,
right.
Your bill.
Right.
Because if they're still working, people can still use them.
Of course.
Them.
And, okay. and It all depends on how you use that cart and where you store it. I know, Brad, you had mentioned your carts are in good working condition. You store them in your garage, and only having two in your household, they don't take a lot of wear and tear. So, you know, I think that those carts from 2004, if one takes care of them properly, they could last another 5 to 6 years. But if they're stored outside in the conditions, sunlight, snow, rain, sleet, whatever, and one uses them more so than others, yeah, they're going to fall apart quicker than...
Is there a point where a cart is so beat up that the village actually can mandate, hey, you need to get a new one?
Yeah.
Is that somewhere in the...
It's when the lid is missing. Yes. The lid is broken off because our ordinance requires that your garbage be contained.
Covered.
And covered.
Yes. That way we don't get rainwater in with the garbage, and then that adds to the weight of the load and we pay more. Or that water leaks out as leachate as we're heading down the road.
Yeah, but we're building another pond, so it'll be fine.
Throw them all in there.
I guess to bring this to your attention, because we get phone calls every week. We just started about a year ago. And there are a few, a majority wants you explain to them what I just explained to you. Yep, I'm coming in to buy a new one.
But there, we deliver it, right?
Yeah, we'll deliver it. We'll pick up and dispose of the old one. But there are a few that you talk to multiple people in the household. And I want to give you a heads up, because after you've talked to somebody more than twice, my next response to them is, please come to the Public Works Committee, and they need to hear from you.
Is this the first go-round where we've charged them for the trash cans?
No. We started a couple years ago.
Yes. But the old trash cans from 2005, there was no charge for those.
Correct. Well, in a roundabout way, everyone paid for them because it was borrowed money. When the village started the program back in 2004, we bought 3 garbage cans for every resident, 2 recyclable and 1 garbage, and it was roughly $600,000 to $700,000 to buy all of them.
Just for the cans?
Yep.
Wow.
And once that manufacturer went out of business, we were unable to get the parts anymore, and we used all the spare parts we had, it came down to, we have to order from a different company, and that's when the residents started to have to pay for those.
Are the new carts stamped with alloy?
Yeah.
And then, I'm sorry, but the recycling ones and the new ones, are they a different color, or is it just a different color lid?
The recycling container's blue. The garbage is a granite gray color. We sell the carts to residents at our cost. That same cart sells for $140 at Home Depot. We sell for $70.
So for those of us with 2 older recycling carts now, are we allowed to get 2 newer recycling, or is it just one?
It should be just one.
Just one, because it's going to be bigger.
Mm-hmm. All right, that was just discussion for that. Then moving on to number 11.
Move on. That trash talk.
That's enough trash talking here. Number 11, discussion regarding the 2022 MS4 Stormwater Annual Report.
I'll keep this brief.
Verbatim.
And I'll shut up.
Every year we complete a stormwater report documenting the activities that we've taken the year before. That report was submitted in the March. It's included in your packet. And there was a staff report summarizing those efforts that we've taken. If you have any questions, feel free to call me. And a lot of, you know, that the first part of this meeting, what Nick had talked about, that's one of the permit conditions. He mentioned that in one of his slides, and pointed out the 9 permit conditions that we have with our municipal stormwater permit, and one is water quality. Another one is public education and outreach. And by having this meeting tonight, we've checked 2 boxes.
So what color are the wheels on the trash cans?
thought we were done trash talking. Right? The black to go with the granite. Any questions on the DNR report for this year? It's quite inclusive. And when you think about all the information that goes into this thing,
it's
a good job on that.
Thank you.
All right. That brings us to item number 12, adjournment. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
And a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Adjourn at, let's say, 6:58.